everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Before I get to my wonderful guest, I want to just remind you there are some great new book releases this week. Alan Eskins has released his book, The Shadows We Hide. He'll be my guest on Wednesday. Tom Pitts, who's my guest later on tonight, released 101. I absolutely highly recommend this noir crime fiction novel. Catherine Jane released Diamonds to Die For, part of her Intrepid Women's series. Excuse me. Diane Stuckert released Fool's Moon. Jamie Mason released James Bond Roulette. Patty Fiala, PJ Fiala, released Lincoln. That's part of her Bounty Hunters book, too. And Elliot Parker released A Knife's Edge. Please go to your local bookstores and check them out, or wherever you buy your books, or you can look on my website or my Facebook page. My guest today is a woman I've been trying to get on the show, it seems like forever. I love her Facebook page. Julie Mulhern writes, one of her series is set in the 70s, and so she always puts commercials or print ads from whatever the fashion was for the day, and some of them are absolutely hysterical. She is a USA Today best-selling author of The Country Club Murders and The Poppy Fields Adventures. I am so pleased to welcome to the show Julie Mulhern. Julie, welcome to Authors on the Air, and thank you for being with me today.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. We were talking in the green room a little bit before the show started about your love of Agatha Christie and how you kind of grew up with on her books. I did too, so I count that as a big bonus win for me that we have that in common. And also, we were laughing about all of your 70s advertisements because, loath as I am to admit it, I recall a lot of those. And they bring back kind of funny memories for me when I see your Facebook page. What a great tie-in for your books. Tell us how you decided to write in the 70s, your series in the 70s.
You know, there are two reasons. One is rose-colored glasses. I was a kiddo in the 70s, and I remember them very, very fondly. I wasn't old enough to really have the bad parts of the 70s register with me so much, so I remember all the good parts and love them. And the second thing was just sheer laziness, because I was not too terribly into CSI type of crime solving when I was thinking about writing a mystery, and so much of that didn't exist in the 1970s that I thought I would be able to avoid research, and I was wrong. but I don't need to know about DNA and things like that. But I do need to know 70s stuff.
Yes, you do. So research it is. Is Google your best friend?
It really is. I love Google. I love Wikipedia. I love any number of 70s slang sites. Those can come in really handy. And then, of course, CNN did that wonderful, wonderful series, The 1970s. Mm-hmm. And I watched that and really got some, tips. Writing a series set in the 70s, people, in essence, are the same. What you want is that one thing, that tab with lime, or phones with cords, or call waiting, or emergency breakthroughs on telephone lines, or what have you, that makes people go, oh, my God, I remember that. And
I do.
to give it that sense of realness. And so that has been very useful. Earlier this year, I tried to write a short story. I did write a short story, but the first one I tried to write, I had Ellison, who is the heroine of that series, going to a friend's house, and they're watching a basketball game, and it's a Thursday night, and it's all exciting. And Ellison lives in Kansas City, and there was a basketball player at the time. His name was Tiny Archibald. And I was going to do a riff on Tiny Archibald's name and all this. And I wrote the story and realized that there is no way that Ellison could have gone to someone's house on a Thursday night to watch basketball, because they didn't have professional sports on television on Thursday nights in the 70s.
There you go. There you go.
So that is, yeah, one of those research things that I went, whoops, should have checked that out first.
It's interesting how just something as innocuous as a Thursday night basketball game would bring the wrath of readers down on you, wouldn't it?
Well, it would. And one time that Wikipedia sort of steered me wrong was in basketball. And I think I have Ellison talking about basketball in some book and the three-point shot. And as it turns out, and I'm going to get this wrong even now, but the NBA and the NCAA did not instigate this three-point shot in the same year. So I think
right.
I have it in my books that there is a three-point shot before it actually existed in college football, in college basketball. And I had plenty of emails about that. Whoops.
Tell me a little bit about. Well, tell me about how you came to writing.
You know, it was something I really, really always wanted to do. And I worked for magazines here in Kansas City for years. I edited a magazine, and then I freelanced for a number of magazines locally. And then an agent who actually was representing me for national magazines, said, you know, you ought to write fiction. And so I wrote a YA book, which was truly, truly just as bad as can be. And she read it and said, you know, there's a lot of money in romance. Why don't you write a romance instead? Your voice is all wrong for kids. So I actually wrote a romance, and then I had to read a bunch of romances to know how to write them, because I didn't read romance. So I read a bunch of romances and I wrote one, and it wasn't a terrible book. And it was out on submission forever and ever. And while it was on submission, I thought, well, I'm going to just write something else, and this time I'm going to write what I like. And so I started writing mysteries, which is what I'd been reading all along and probably what I should have been writing all along. But that's sort of how I came to write mysteries, and it's just a good fit for me.
Well, interestingly enough, though, you did write two historical books that look like they're romance, and since I don't read really historicals like way back when, Bayou Moon and Bayou Nights were your historicals. I'm assuming those are romance.
Sure, but I don't know what it is about me. I've never written a book where I don't kill someone. So those are romances based around a mystery, as it were, in New Orleans in 1902.
Wow. But that's pretty cool. I mean, you did it. You did what you did what you wanted to do. They seem to be well received. I mean, you got great reviews from them. So that's great.
Yeah.
But
just
not
really
your cup of
think
tea.
That I think mystery is my home, and you know, if I never have to write another sex scene, as long as I live, that'll be okay.
Well, I just want you to know that Bayou Moon is available on Amazon for $899, according to their list. They have one used book for $899.99. I love when I see things like that, because you think, now there you go. There you go. There it is. You've missed your calling if you're going to sell a book for $900, right?
And I really have no idea how that ends up happening. I almost think it's a money laundering thing. I've thought about writing a current mystery about money laundering and doing it through Amazon with books that are priced at $1,000 for no reason.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy.
I got the rights back to those two romances, and they are not currently in publication. So the paperback books that are hanging out there, somebody figured, ooh, somebody might really want to pay for this. So and that is why they got marked up like that.
That's funny. Now, I'm assuming the Country Club Murders, because you have 8 books in that series, were your first books that you wrote, because Poppy came later, didn't she?
She did.
Yeah.
First Country Club Murder released in 2015, actually.
My gosh. You have 8 books in that time. Oh, my goodness gracious. That's a lot of writing. You have very unique cover art, and it really brands your books well. Who helps you design your covers?
For the Country Club Murders, I work with my publisher, Henry Press, and they have a wonderful designer whose name I believe is Stephanie Chanto Savage, and she does all of my covers. And I'm very lucky in that we're collaborative. And I got to meet Stephanie a couple of years ago, and at the time I was writing Clouds in My Coffee, and I told her, so my next cover, I want Ellison in a coffee cup. And my editor called me and said, Stephanie says you want to put your heroine in a coffee cup. And it's to this day, it's my very favorite cover. Backstabbers, which just released, has Ellison on a knife, like on a knife edge sort of thing in Backstabbers. So Stephanie does a wonderful job. Shadow dancing, she's dancing with someone, which is fun. What they did with the very first book with that series was they sort of went with the bird's eye view. So looking down, which is so much harder than you would think it would be, because we're running out of ways and things for Ellison to be on that you can look down on.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, is Diamond Girl the only book that Ellison is not on?
It is, and that is because Diamond Girl is my one and only short story, no basketball in it. And it is told from her housekeeper's point of view, which is why it's got a tray of canapé.
Oh,
so Ellison is a character in it, but it's from a different point of view.
Now, you also have the Poppy Fields Adventures. So the first one is Fields Guide to Abduction, and the next is Fields Guide to Assassins, which sounds like really in-depth, heavy-duty murder mystery. So tell us a little bit about Poppy Fields.
Well, Poppy Fields, the name should give it away that it's fairly lighthearted. Poppy is a Hollywood it girl who sort of finds herself working for a government agency. In the first book, she goes to Mexico and gets abducted by the Sinaloan cartel and manages to foil a plot to import new drugs to the United States and save the day. And in the second book, she saves Paris. So the hope is that Poppy gets to travel around a lot to exotic places where I would either like to go or have been, and sort of makes the reader feel like they're there with her. And, I've had a wonderful time writing them. They're really just fun.
So is it your intention to follow in your character's footsteps, Poppy's footsteps, and travel to all these wonderful places, or is she following yours?
Well, she started out in Mexico, and I've actually never been to Mexico. So she went to Cabo and then Sinaloa. So I got on YouTube and traveled around the Baja Peninsula with some lonely traveler guy, so I got to see all of Baja that way off of YouTube videos, and there aren't a lot of YouTube videos about Sinaloa, simply because nobody goes to Sinaloa.
Right. Who's going to want a video around that? Sure.
Paris, I actually lived in Paris, so that one was a lot easier for me. But even then, doing things that I had not... I sent Poppy to places that I hadn't necessarily been. And so I got to do a little exploring in Paris, too.
Under what circumstances were you in Paris, though? What if, that sounds interesting to me. Was this when you were a magazine writer?
Oh, I wish. No, I spent my junior year abroad, so in college. So it's been years since I've been to Paris. But I lived in Paris on the left bank for a year and loved every minute of it.
I bet. What kind of columns did you write for them, or what did you write for the magazines when you were writing?
You know, I wrote just about anything that they paid me to write. I wrote lots of shelter articles about what people's houses looked like. I wrote food articles. I even wrote an article about cool sculpting, which was interesting. Interviews, you name it. I kind of did it all. And still do. There's a magazine in Kansas City that called 435, and one of my friends is the editor. And every so often she'll call and say, hey, can you do this? And I'm always glad to, because it's a nice break from making stuff up.
Well, I love your bio on your website, which, by the way, if anybody wants to go and check it out, and you really should because it's a cool website, juliemulhernauthor.com. You have a little bit about you, and you say in your bio that you are you whip up gourmet meals for your family, and you work out at the gym and find new ways to keep your house spotlessly clean, although you've got an active imagination. So I would imagine, being as prolific a writer as you are, you're kind of a little tongue-in-cheek there, because you said you're really very good at calling for takeout.
I am very good at calling for takeout. In fact, I'm wondering where I'm going to call tonight.
Good for you. Let's talk about Backstabbers. Tell us a little bit about the story, what Ellison is up to in this particular book.
You know, Ellison has this really just unfortunate habit of finding bodies, and it's, you know, it's just not good. And in Backstabbers, she meets with her broker, or is trying to meet with her broker, and walks into his office and finds him dead, with his pants around his ankles, and he's been murdered. And I wrote Backstabbers before the latest news cycle. And it was sort of my Me Too book before Me Too was a thing. It's about sexual harassment in the workplace in the 1970s, and sort of hens coming home to roost, as it were, for men who take advantage of women. And I had a really fun time writing it and thinking about it and thinking about what, you know, suitable punishments, as it were. And
I bet you did. Well, the reviews have been great for this, but I have a very specific question about this. How did Detective Jones get his first name?
His father is a politics professor at Berkeley, and his mother is an artist, and, you know, anarchy. It seemed like the kind of name that they would name their son. And I wanted a character who absolutely followed the rules all the time. And so anarchy it was. The last thing that his father would want him to be is a cop, and that's what he is. And he's a rule follower, and that's what I mean. So I liked that sort of juxtaposition of somebody who always follows the rules being named Anarchy.
That is so cute. It's a great name, and it's a great name for a character. I love the whole, the whole premise of his name. Julie, you write an awful lot, and you've got these two series going. We won't talk about the historical romance because that's not your thing. Who do you like to read when you're not writing?
I really, and especially of late, just because everything seems so dark every time I turn on the television, I love lighthearted mysteries. One of my great friends is Gretchen Archer, and I love reading her books.
I like her books, too.
I am a great fan of Jenna DeLeon. I really, really like Leslie Langtry, who writes the Mary Rath series. And I like Liliana Hart's Whiskey series a lot. And then I also read lots of biography and nonfiction. And just because I think it gives you an eye to building characters when you read biography.
Well,
and
you're not
why
kidding.
People are the way they are.
You know, it's interesting. We have a podcast that's on hiatus right now, and the host is a New York Times bestselling thriller writer, but he likes to read biographies and memoirs. He says he thinks some of them are as thrilling as fiction. Do you find that to be so?
I think that's probably true. I think the really well-written ones are just amazing. And there's such, excuse me.
Bless you. Bless you.
And I never sneeze just once. You always get twice. I apologize. The really well-written ones are so, so good. And they're timeless. I'm trying to think of the name. I read a biography a couple years ago called Maverick and Mauve. And it is about Consuela Vanderbilt getting married off to the Duke of Marlborough. It was one of the most interesting books I think I've ever read. And I forget titles like you wouldn't believe. And the fact that I can still remember that title is quite something.
It says something. Well, speaking of, do you ever go back and have books that you absolutely want to reread?
The books that I tend to reread and I do are things from my childhood. So I reread Pride and Prejudice every so often and Jane Eyre every so often. And
wow.
I will also reread Dorothy Sayers. If you put Dorothy Sayers in front of me, I will just disappear and not come out of my reading nook until it's done because I love Peter Wimsey so much.
Oh, how wonderful. So you're a classics gal, and I think that's magnificent.
I am.
I hope that your books become classics too. What's next for you, Julie? I'm assuming that you're writing again. What's next on your list?
Field's Guide to Voodoo. Poppy is off to New Orleans next, and that should be out around the first of the year, I hope. And then I am also working on the Ninth Country Club Murder. I just deleted 30,000 words this morning, so it might be a little late. But
wow. Let's talk about that. Don't go further than that. I want to talk. We have just a couple more minutes before I have to let you go. But why delete 30,000 words? Did you hit a roadblock of some sort?
I did, and I looked back at what the problem was, and the problem started on about page 2. And so I just cut out half the book. There's a few chapters that are salvageable, and I salvaged them and went ahead and deleted the rest. It just wasn't working at all. And
How did you know it wasn't working?
I can tell. I mean, I think I've done this enough now. I know what my expectations are of my books, and I have a pretty good idea what my readers' expectations are. And I think I had gone a little bit too dark, and I was wandering in a forest rather than heading towards a goal, if you will. So they had to go.
Does that upset you that you've taken that much time only to have to delete it?
You know, it's part of the process sometimes, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't. This is the first time I've ever had to do it, but I don't think I could be writing what I'm writing now. I mean, I've started over, and it's really on point and good and flowing. I don't think I could have just sat down and written what I've got on the page right now unless I had gotten the dark stuff out. So it's almost like Lancing
yeah.
in the oil, which is not a pretty visual, but...
No, but it makes sense to me. I often wonder if words just flow, maybe not, you know, I mean, just you get in the zone and you start writing. And I wonder how many other writers would admit that they cut, you know, 25,000-30,000 words out of their book, because that's a novella right there. And that's a lot of words to chop out. But I guess you're being true to you and true to your readers, so that's really important.
You know, the best email I've ever received from a reader was something along the lines of, I was reading your book while I was in the infusion clinic for chemotherapy, and I was laughing so hard everyone wanted to know what I was reading. And getting emails like that, or having people message me that they got them through a really rough time in their lives and brought some laughter back to them, those are, you know, that's what I'm writing for. I'm not writing one piece. I'm writing to entertain and hopefully make people smile and feel good.
Well, obviously it's working, because Backstabbers has 5-star reviews straight across the board there. Congratulations on that. And thank you so much for coming on the show today, Julie Mulhern. Will you come back sometime and let's catch up and talk about, let's do a Poppy Fields book next time you come?
I would absolutely love that.
I would love to have you come back and tell me more about your life and everything. I feel like there are things we just didn't get a chance to cover today. But I'm so appreciative of everything that you did and coming on the show and for your patience and me getting you on. I apologize that it took so long, but I'm thrilled that you're here today. If I don't talk, I'll see you on Facebook, obviously, but if I don't talk to you before that, I hope you have a wonderful holiday season. And you and I are going to talk again in the new year, yes?
Absolutely. I would just love that. And thank you for having me on today.
It's just a
delight to chat with you, Pam.
Thank you so much, Julie, and with you as well. Folks, remember, this is Julie Mulhern. Her new book is Backstabbers. It's part of the Country Club Murders. It's number 8 in the series. You can find out more about Julie by going to her website at juliemulhernauthor.com. Thanks for being with me, everyone, and thank you, Mom and Dad. I'll see you later.